I listened to an interview this week with the Smothers Brothers. They are going to be performing a little bit later this month in a show that's already been sold out. But they also intend on a few additional shows. They were as sharp as ever. And it was really fun to listen to them and their observations. Do you want to sneak in a little Smothers Brothers in their honor? They just told some great stories, kind of about their somewhat accidental success as comedians when they originally were a folk music trio, which I never knew, and then a duo. Let's take a listen to this Saturday Light Brigade favorite.
You know something, Dickie?
What?
I had to grow up to be like my old man. How about that?
I think that's a very fine ambition for a young man, to grow up to be like his father.
Right.
Depending on what his father does, though.
My father did a lot of things. My father did many things. He went around doing a lot of things.
A sailor, what do you think about that? He wears a sailor's collar, he wears a sailor's hat, he wears a sailor's raincoat, he wears a sailor's shoes, and every Saturday evening he reads the Sunday news. And someday, if I can, I'm gonna be a sailor the same as my old man. My old man's an anthropologist, what do you think about that? He wears an anthropologist collar, he wears an anthropologist hat, he wears an anthropologist raincoat, he wears anthropologist shoes, and every Saturday evening he reads the Sunday news. And someday, if I can, I'm gonna be an anthropologist the same as my old man.
My old man's a refrigerator repairman. What do you think about that? He wears a refrigerator repairman's collar. He wears a refrigerator repairman's hat. He wears a refrigerator repairman's raincoat. He wears a refrigerator shoes. And every Saturday evening, he reads a Playboy.
If I can,
I'm going to be a refrigerator repairman.
Same as my old man.
What do you think about that? Well, you gotta be pretty sharp-witted.
I tell you, Tommy, you're
things like that.
You're very glib.
You certainly do.
Well, here, I'll tell you what my old man does.
My old man's a cotton-picking, finger-licking, chicken plucker. What do you think about that?
You better not make a mistake.
Let's hope not.
He wears a cotton-picking, finger-licking, chicken-pucker's collar. He wears a cotton-picking, finger-licking, chicken-pucker's hat. He wears a cotton-picking, finger-licking, chicken-pucker's raincoat. He wears a cotton-picking, finger-licking, chicken-pucker's shoes. And
you're lucky.
Every Saturday evening, he reads the cotton-picking news. And someday, if I can, be a cotton picking, finger licking, chicken plucker, the same as my old man.
The Smothers Brothers. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger and Chad Green, this is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start. The Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings at WRCT, Pittsburgh, WIUPFM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, WNJR Washington, WCUC Clarion, WMCK.FM McKeesport, PCTV, Comcast 21, Verizon 47, Pittsburgh, RadioPhoenix.org, Loudspeaker.FM, Fort Collins, Colorado, and SLBRadio.org/radio. Written by Mason Williams, the Smothers Brothers theme song.
Sometimes when I'm sad and all alone, just like a child without a home, the love you give me keeps me hanging on. All I ever need is you. You're my first love, you're my last. You're my future, you're my past. Loving you is all I ask. All I ever need is you. Winners come and they go, and they watch the melting snow. Sure as summer follows spring, all the things you do gives me a reason to build my world around you. Some men follow rainbows, I'm told. Some men search for silver, some for gold. But I found my treasure in your soul. Oh, honey, all I ever need is you. Without love, I'll never find a way. Through the ups and downs of every day, I won't sleep at night until you say, oh, honey, all I ever need is you.
Likely culprits at the Saturday Light Brigade. Hello to Nick in New York City. Great to have you along with us. And earlier, we were playing Guess Who this morning with the initials BH, and Andrew had a guess of BoJack Horseman, which from the cartoon, and that is a great guess. I'm glad I noticed that on Facebook. I didn't see it at the same time as you had mentioned that. Thank you for playing along. Thanks to everybody playing along on Facebook. And speaking of thank yous, thank you. If you were among the 361 people, including 73 first-time donors, contributing a record-setting $46,701 during our year-end campaign, I can't tell you how grateful we are for your support. It allows us to open our new Youth Media Center, which is coming along. Carpet's been delivered. The painting is scheduled. A new electrical subpanel has been added. Our classroom furniture deliveries will be complete this coming Monday when the new tables get here. There's still a few things we're working through, but all is coming together well. If you missed the opportunity to support SLB, you can make a secure donation anytime at slbradio.org/donate or by calling us at 412-200-5975 or 1-888-752-7234 or by sending a check to SLB P.O. Box 100092, Pittsburgh 15233.
The Saturday Light Brigade is made possible in part with support from Spatial, providing customizable radio automation software and streaming solutions to radio stations, broadcasters, and businesses around the world since 1999. Additional information is available at spatial.com. That's spacial.com.
Something we do here at SLB is producing podcasts. Not a surprise, podcasts are very similar to a form of radio, and a podcast that might not surprise you that we create is one that talks about the future of education and learning. It's called Remaking Tomorrow. It's hosted by Greg Baer and Ryan Rusteski. We'll be adding new episodes soon. But that podcast also featured a very unique sort of summer replacement where we had youth take over hosting duties. And for today's Youth Express segment, we are going to begin with one of those youth takeover episodes. You're going to hear some students. They'll introduce themselves, and they're going to talk about learning methods and teaching styles that they think are most effective for young people. It's all part of a youth takeover of Remaking Tomorrow.
You're listening to a youth takeover edition of the Remaking Tomorrow podcast, where teens host the program and welcome peer guests.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of learning, of teaching, of being. I'm Xander, I'm 17, and I'm a rising senior, and I live in Oakmont, and I'm here with my co-host.
Hi, I'm Amanti, I'm also a rising senior, and I live in Toronto, PA.
This podcast is powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging, relevant, and equitable learning practices in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change. On today's episode, we'll be talking with two youth guests about how students should be supported as they learn, both today and in the future. To start, let's meet our guests.
I'm Corinne. I'm a rising senior, and I live in Ben Avon Heights.
I'm Sam. I'm a rising senior, and I live in Upper St. Clair.
So today, we will be talking about how we learn best, the places, the methods most conducive for learning. Without going into too much detail to start, what methods works best for you all? For example, lectures, discussions, hands-on, taking notes, drawings, and etc.
Mine would be hands-on, or like if I'm listening to music or like if something's in an audio form, I tend to like grasp and understand it more. I'll be able to like remember it later.
I'm a visual learner. I like to see things laid out in diagrams and show how the ideas are connected.
For me, I'm definitely hands-on and visual, but I can learn in other ways.
Me being a visual learner and also a hands-on learner, taking notes is really helpful for me because I can remember and recall where I put a specific note and go back to that.
So when I was younger, I couldn't stop drawing on my arm, and all the teachers would think I'm distracted or like they'll yell at me because, oh, you're not doing your work. But then they noticed that every time I would draw on my arm, I'd actually be acing the tests I took that week. And the days that they'd stop me, I'd probably miss something and I'd fail. And my mom, she's like, I come home, there's ink all over me, so she would get really mad. And then she just bought me like these pens that were like, you can write on yourself with these pens. Like, they're safe ink pens. And my teachers allowed it, and I gradually started to pass stuff from there. Somehow it just helped me. Fidgeting without, you know, causing too much of a distraction.
I think we all have that one thing that helps us.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I like twiddle my pen. I'll like tap on the desk.
I'll tap on my desk too.
So another question for you guys. What is the pros and cons of the learning methods that you guys described?
I talked about how I like things laid out in diagrams, but that doesn't always work for every subject. So sometimes I have to use different methods for different subjects.
Yeah, sometimes I'm not able to have it in music form. Like, I know when we were younger, you'd have like those conjunction song or like
conjunction, you know, junction.
Yeah, that
what's
one.
That function?
Exactly. You hear
oh,
it.
I
still remember that to this day because, you know, it's in music form. I can recall it. So sometimes it's not available, or the teachers just like they don't care enough to put it into a song form. So I don't really get the most of it. So that's kind of the con for me.
Going back to what you were saying about the songs, I think that definitely helps younger learners grasp something because it sticks with them a lot easier. Mm-hmm. So they're just singing it randomly and they don't know when they're going to take the test. And it's just like, hey, I know that word.
Yeah.
Conjunction, you know, and it's just like they start singing. And then so it helps them. So, yeah.
Did anyone else for their multiplication tables, did they have like certain songs like for multiplications of seven, at least in my school, it was like the happy birthday song. It was like 7, 14, 21, 28, 35, and like continuous.
Oh, no. Actually, I never,
you've never
did
had
that, before.
That?
No, that actually.
Is that just my school?
I'm going to be honest. I still don't know my multiplication.
But like there was like different ones and it just helped like at least me like grasp that. So I think like putting things in the music form. But I also think adding on to when it comes to music, do you guys focus better when you're listening to music when you're like doing independent work?
It depends on the kind of music I'm listening to because I would imagine you guys know what lo-fi is. I'm sorry.
That's
lo-fi.
What I, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So lo-fi is a big thing that got popular, especially over COVID, I think, because we were all just trying to relax our minds, focus on getting our schoolwork done. And lo-fi is a very chill type of beat that you can listen to and concentrate a lot easier. R&B works for me. Like, I can't listen to punk music when I'm trying to study. That just doesn't work for me.
I'd say, like, a Mac Miller almost, chiller.
I can't listen to, like, Lil Baby when I'm trying to study because I'll start rapping.
Yeah.
And then I'll start getting into it. So that's another thing, the type of music you're listening to.
When you guys struggle to learn something, what really does help you? Like, do you guys tend to reach out? Do you guys tend to keep it to yourself and try to teach yourself? Do you guys ask your parents? Do you guys go to teachers? Do you guys go to, like, who would you go to, almost, is the question.
I have a problem with asking for help. I mean, I know I should go and ask for help. And Xander knows I don't really get embarrassed of things I do.
No.
Like, I do a lot of crazy stuff. I don't get embarrassed of it. But when it comes to, like, asking for help when I genuinely
need it,
help, I can't bring myself to do it, and it just doesn't work for me.
So a funny story along with that. So I was actually really struggling with chemistry, and my teacher got super mad at me and thought I was joking around whenever I was asking for help. And I was like, I can genuinely not understand this. And I had to transfer my class because she threatened me with detention. So I switched my class. I ended up doing pretty well in it. It was like the remediation version of chemistry. But I'm like, if this teacher's not going to teach me, like, what other choice do I got?
Right. Yeah.
At my school, we have these programs for people that have ADHD or, like, different...
Like an IEP?
Yeah, it was that. So we actually get a certain level of help, but the thing is that with our school, the help isn't much help. It's, like, more just...
Giving you answers, almost?
Yeah, it's either you get the answers flat out, boom, you don't really learn anything, or they're just like, you do it on your own, you should know this.
If I need help, like, I'm not afraid to ask for it, but it depends on the teacher.
Yeah, I usually look it up on the internet and go on YouTube and watch some sort of video, like a crash course video or something that lays it out in, like, visual images, because that works for me.
Khan Academy videos.
Yes, yeah. Khan Academy. That was, like, my whole history class this year. If you were in charge of teaching kids, what would you guys do?
I'd make it a little bit more activity-based. Yeah, I know at a young age, kids are very impressionable about what they do and not really some, like, they can be about what they hear, but more getting them to get active and, like, step out of their comfort zone at a younger age. So they're, like, getting them outside, doing some fun activities, not making everything too related to school, but keeping that school aspect inside of it.
For, like, an example, I would say, like, if you're teaching a science class and, like, you're talking about, like, photosynthesis, and you take them outside and, like, kind of describe to them with, like, a physical flower that's planted into the ground or a tree or, like, whatever it is, and, like, how, like, the water system works and that kind of stuff. That's just a science example. Yeah. Like, it's hard to do with certain classes like history. Like, you can't be like, oh, let's take a time machine and go back to 1862 or whatever it is.
I think that would engage more students as well, going out, like, of your way to make sure they understand or just showing them, like, a real-life example.
Yeah, and if you related it to someone or something in their life and then they looked at that and they saw that again, they would kind of remember the lesson.
Having a more accepting space for kids to be themselves and for everyone to feel more comfortable in their own skin and not be judged by everything they do, because in high school, that tends to happen a lot. People judge a book by its cover, and I know we've all heard the saying, don't do it, but we all do it. And just creating a more accepting environment for kids to just be themselves is something that I would probably enforce.
What solutions would you suggest talking to kids younger than you about learning?
There's a lot of, like, technology out right now that help little kids learn and, like, develop their minds. And my cousin, my little cousin, he's, like, insanely smart at his age. And it's crazy because, like, you know, I was not even nearly as smart as he was at his age. And that's because, like, all he does is, like, play these fun learning computer games. Exactly.
How old is he?
He's 7.
My little cousin, he's 3 or 4, and he knows everything about space. He names all the planets. I'm like, I couldn't tell you all the planets on the Earth right now at 17.
Yes,
it's the same thing with Mike. He's an animal person, so, like, his show was Wild Kratts, and he would just go
Wild
off.
Kratts. Yeah,
and so I would say, like, just don't hold back, don't stop what you're doing. Love to learn, you know, just, like, enjoy learning and keep it fun.
Stay in the moment.
Yeah, like, don't rush out of it to do something else. Just enjoy it.
What you were saying, keep learning fun, I feel like I wouldn't say that's not on the child, but it should be on the adults and the people around them to keep in mind to keep learning fun for the kid.
If I'm going to suggest something for them, this is kind of probably for teachers too, but to offer a bunch of different assignments that cater to different types of learning. Teachers should do that so that kids have the opportunity to figure out how they learn. Because if I knew before now, I've only more recently figured out how I learn best. And if I knew that beforehand, school would have been so much easier.
What different things would you have kids learn at school and community centers or even at home?
Definitely more about themselves. You're always, like, taught to, like, learn math, learn science, learn English, learn, you know, all that stuff. But no one really focuses on your mental well-being, like, until it's too late, when there's a problem. And they should really focus on you at a younger age to help you
find
get the space where you don't have a problem. Yeah, like, find yourself and just genuinely care about, like, your well-being and teach kids to care about themselves and others.
I think that in schools and, like, community centers and even, like, at home too, adults can teach kids how to interact with other people in a positive
way. That's what I was thinking.
We all had that kid when he was little that, like, was just really annoying, and he would, like, come back at you and come back at you.
That was me.
Yeah. So if you got taught how to treat people in, like, the right way, I feel like people now still need to be taught how to treat people in, like, a positive manner.
Yeah, I feel like even since we're entering such an age where technology is so involved in our lives and we're not always talking one-on-one with someone, communication skills would be really important to learn.
Cyberbullying also. That's a huge problem.
Yeah, soft skills are very important, especially listening to someone. If you're having a conversation, you have to listen to what they're saying to have a reasonable thing to say back, you know?
Yeah.
If something in education seems to be working now, how would you keep it going?
I would say listening to, like, the students more than teachers are, because I feel like they don't really take the students' opinion into consideration most of the time. If they, you know, take the time out of their day to, like, really ask the students and gather up survey maybe of how everyone's feeling about the subject, and like collecting a large pool of those results will tell you this is a good thing, more students are learning from this than not, or this is a bad thing, everybody hates this, we should stop doing it.
Some teachers have certain schedules. They have schedules for like months in advance. But what if someone doesn't understand? What if a kid doesn't understand? They're just left in the dust. What if they miss a day? They're back. They're like, oh, I can only meet with you this day and this day. What if I got practice?
Yeah.
What if I got a family obligation? Mm-hmm. What if I got something? What if I got work? Like, what am I supposed to do? Just sit there and be like, oh, I guess I'll go online and look it up, even though this is your job to teach me and make time. I think they should slow things down. Say they have a first period class, a fifth period class, and a sixth period class. If their first period of class is way ahead, I would say slow it down a little bit and try to catch everyone to like a certain spot at a reasonable manner. You can't be like, my fifth period class is like 2 days behind. Let's throw all that information out there today and get them caught up. They need to like still sectionally teach it. But if one class is excelling, I guess calm it down.
I would say
if the class is behind and this is to the teachers, don't stress the students out about trying to speed up the learning or just try to like get on the same page as the other students. But it's not the same group of students. And you can't compare one class to the other class because they're not the same kids. They don't learn the same. They don't think the same. They don't talk the same. They don't have the same households. They don't have the same minds.
Maybe teachers could provide optional non-graded practice activities for students in case they are a little lost with something. They'll have the opportunity to do that but not feel forced to do it.
When you do something on your own, you feel better about it than when you're getting forced to do it. Like, I can read on my own, but when a teacher tells me I have to read something, I'm like, okay, well, I don't
want to
read.
I don't want to.
Or like when you go home, it's like kind of off topic, but like when you go home, you do the dishes, you know, it's okay. But like when your mom says do the dishes, you're like, oh, I don't want to do the dishes now.
And it gives you some responsibility over your own schoolwork.
If something in education seems to not work out now, what can the teacher change to make it work for you?
Sometimes I feel like teachers have certain attitudes about what they're teaching. Like they might say, oh, this sucks, but we have to learn it. But I feel like maybe they should try and keep a more positive attitude because we probably don't want to learn it to begin with. And then if they feel negative,
why the heck am I paying attention? Why would I ever do that?
Yeah. The teachers that more show love for what they do and passion, I think you learn a lot more from that class because you see it's like, hey, they really must like this. Maybe I can like it too. And then you kind of go out of your way. And maybe you don't like science. Maybe you're an art person maybe you're like an English person. And you're like, I could always try this. Like, I could learn something new in science. Like, you know, can you teach me that? That seems very interesting. Yeah. I've never thought about it. So
I've actually had a teacher. It was my 8th grade math teacher. And she was literally like a mother to me. And she would in and she'd call me her son. It was like
a really funny thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was like a connection that we just had. She would come to my football games, even when they're like out of state. Like, I remember we had a game in Ohio, and she made the trip to come to, like, our football game in Ohio. And through all these years, most of the days she'll email me and say, oh, how you doing? You doing good in math? So she'd, like, check up on me now again. Now at math, I'm still not the best, but it's not
as bad because you have that relationship with your teacher.
I come to find it somewhat enjoyable. Exactly.
Say you love something all throughout your school years, and right when you hit high school, you have a really bad math teacher. Say you used to love math, you used to have a strong passion for math, and you come to high school and you have that one teacher who just hates their job. They act like they don't want to be there every day. They act like they don't care. They're just like handing you things and not actually teaching you. That can also be a detriment to your learning in math and kind of hold you back from wanting to learn more or even staying focused in their class.
Whenever you're saying like when teachers are active, if they're energetic about what they like and what they do, it makes it so much more enjoyable. They're like jumping all over the place and like want to teach this to you.
I used to have a very, 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 and notice I said very a lot, very energetic chemistry teacher who at 8 in the morning would come to school just full of life and full of excitement. And we were all just sitting there like, I don't want to be here, but you kind of are starting my day. So, I mean, it's okay. Like, he would start the day every morning with a joke. And even if we weren't in the mood, and even if we act like it wasn't funny, which it wasn't, it was very corny, we would just be like, hey, you forgot the joke this morning. He'd be like, oh, so you guys do like them. We're like, eh. But no, it definitely does help. Even if we're not showing it, I think the teachers should still be consistent with that, because you never know. Being a kid at heart is another thing. I know if my teacher were to put marshmallows and toothpicks in front of me in geometry class and have us build like a pyramid that would stand up, because we had to learn about triangles and different shapes and all that kind of stuff, I'd be like, this is a kid activity, I don't want to do this. But secretly, I'd be like, this is really fun, I'm actually enjoying this, and I feel like a kid right now, which is another thing. Like, we miss our childhood. I think all of us can agree that we miss our childhood. And so just like having some time to be a kid is just fun.
But on the contrary to that, yeah, we are kids at heart, but teachers, when they try to overcompensate for that, they tend to baby us. And it's like, I'm a kid at heart, not a baby at heart.
Yeah.
And when they start to baby us to the point where it starts getting annoying, that's when you really start to disconnect, and that's when you're just like, okay, well.
Whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not going to deal with this anymore.
It's like that happy medium, and I think experience plays a big role in a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I've definitely had teachers that have had certain attitudes about their classes. I remember I had this one class, honestly, it might have been sixth grade math, and he would just sit there and he would give us a workbook and we would just learn the math on our own and do whatever we did, and that was the class. We just did all of it from this one workbook, and I hated that. Like, that was terrible. And I don't even like workbooks anymore now for all other classes. Like, that kind of ruined workbooks for me.
The trauma.
So as a final thought, what are one or two things you think are going to be essential to support kids when they learn in the future?
The programs that they have in place, like the ALS, like Assisted Learning Support, like that program is very helpful. That was very helpful for me.
I think like throwing things into songs, like we said earlier, the conjunction junction and the multiplication tables, throwing a song like to help.
Boost, exactly. Because you'll just be, like Amante said, you'll just be singing it out of random and you'll be like, wait, I know that.
Whenever I hear a conjunction, I promise you that song is still in my head from like second grade.
I think different learning style activities or even just different options.
I like that.
That'd be helpful.
And like I said earlier, more comfortable environment for kids to be themselves. A more accepting place.
What is one thing that parents and educators can do to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
Getting rid of like the thought of this wasn't how it was when I was growing up.
I hated that.
Like,
I hated
when I was
that.
Younger, my mom would be like, oh, you don't have enough homework tonight. I had so much homework. And I'm like, okay, well,
this isn't
have
how
so
they taught me when I was a kid.
Exactly. Like,
it's like some sort of guilt tripping.
Exactly.
Like, you have no control over that. What are you supposed to, you're supposed to just feel bad about that?
It's like, yeah, mom, you had to like walk to the library and like study for this test and read all these books. I'm like, yo, I don't got to do that. It's just, you know, answering four questions maybe. You know, that might be the homework. Those questions could still be challenging. It's still helping me learn. It's not the end of the world if I don't have homework, you know.
Yeah.
And just like getting rid of that stigma around modern day assignments or modern day ways of teaching.
This Youth Takeover edition of the Remaking Tomorrow podcast is a collaboration of Remake Learning, Knowledge Works, and SLB Radio Productions. Opinions solely reflect those of the individual speaking. For more details, visit remakelearning.org.
Produced right here in our studios, I hope you enjoyed hearing that podcast. You can subscribe to Remaking Tomorrow wherever you look for podcasts. Now, coming up, you're going to hear from some more youth. We'll have a music trio to feature for you. Flute and oboe. Two flutes, one oboe coming up. And singer-songwriter Kim Maverick is going to be live in our studios next hour. Thank you for being along with us here at the Saturday Light Brigade. We appreciate your being tuned in. I hope you're warm today. And that you're feeling healthy. throughout the morning, I've been issuing our gratitude to 361 people, including 73 first-time donors, banding together to contribute a record-setting $46,701 during our year-end campaign. If you were traveling or missed the opportunity due to a busy holiday season, you can make a secure donation as part of the campaign online at slbradio.org/donate, or you can phone us this morning, 412-200-5975 or 1-888-752-7234. Our address, SLB PO Box 10092, Pittsburgh 15233. We're grateful for your support. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger, this is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. Saturday mornings on a great group of radio stations and internet radio stations and streaming services, including free apps like TuneIn, Simple Radio, and Radio Garden.
Come on and take a walk with me through this green and growing land. Walk through the meadows and the mountains and the sand. Walk through the valleys and the rivers and the plains. Walk through the sun and walk through the rain. Here is a land full of power and glory, beauty the words cannot recall. Oh, her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom. Glory shall rest on a song. From Colorado, Kansas, and the Carolinas too, Virginia and Alaska, from the old to the new, Texas and Ohio and the California shore. Tell me who could ask for more. Here is a land full of power and glory, beauty the words cannot recall. Oh, her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom. Glory shall rest on us all. Yet she's only as rich as the poorest of the poor, only as free as a padlocked prison door, only as strong as our love for this land, only as tall as we stand. Here is a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. Oh, her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom. Glory shall rest on us all. Come on and take a walk with me through this green and growing land. Walk through the meadows and the mountains and the sand. Walk through the valleys and the rivers and the plains. Walk through the sun and walk through the rain. Here is a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. Oh, her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom. Glory shall rest on us all, on us all, on us all, on us all, on us all.
That's the group called Disappear Fear. With the power and the glory, written by Phil Oakes. That is a little preview of what you're going to hear in a moment. The Incalzando Trio. I did want to give you a sense of what's happening later this morning here at SLB. And in the weeks to come, too, Kim Maverick, a singer-songwriter, is en route, and she'll be here in our next hour. Next week, we plan to have Dr. Nelson Harrison with us. a legendary Pittsburgh jazz historian. We hope to have him with us at 7:50 Eastern next week. Also, we'll have Valerie Bundy from the Pittsburgh Glass Center at 8:20 next week. And live music next week, Fat Man D will be with us at 11 o'clock. On the 22nd of January, Julianne Wright on the 29th. Daryl Sean with flamenco and classical guitar. On February 5th, the Stapletons will be with us on the 12th. In our 8:35 pop-up slot, Princess Jafar from the new Hazlitt Theater's upcoming production of The Princess is Right. And I'm only going to go as far as March 5th. I'm tickled to see that Chuck Osten, Cigar Box and Folk Blues and Rockabilly Hall of Famer will be here performing. So lots of good things to come in the year ahead here at SLB. And as we get ready for our trio to perform, I do want to thank our hardworking staff who spends a lot of time making sure everything comes together as it should. The guests you just heard me mention are pretty much all coordinated by associate producer Alexis Thompson, who has been doing an incredible job in that regard. We also thank Director of Programs, Chanessa Schuller, Director of Operations, Robert Gray, Chad Green, our engineer here Saturday morning, as well as our manager of production and distribution, Susan Blackman, Director of Development, Tad Whistle, Manager of Special Programs, Ben Rutkowski, Senior Staff Educator, Britt Hafley, and Deanna Beringer, our staff educators. Morgan McCray is our high school intern, Ricky Berger, executive producer, and this is Larry Berger. Now, let's take a listen to this trio. This is from about 5 years ago. At the time, the trio included two 17-year-olds and a 20-year-old. You'll hear them introduce themselves, and you'll enjoy the sound of two flutes and an oboe with the Incalzando Trio. Thank you. there you have a trio from Youth Chamber Connection, and they're called the Encalzando Trio, and you'll get a chance, we'll hear the background behind the name, but first let's meet everybody, and I'm going to start with you. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Elizabeth Sykes. I am a sophomore at CCAC. I've been with this, these girls for 2 years now, and it's been so much fun.
Oh, that's got to be great. What are you studying now or taking now?
Right now, I'm just doing general studies. I haven't figured out quite what I want to do yet.
That's a great way to get started, too. What high school did you go to, and where did you grow up?
I am from Mount Lebanon in the South Hills. I was homeschooled all through high school. But I did take music there, so that was really a big part of my life.
I was curious about that, so you were able to connect with the orchestra there. When did you start playing flute?
I started in the fourth grade.
And you've not stopped.
No.
Have you thought about what you might like to do after college?
I definitely want to continue playing music since it's just been a huge part of my life. I haven't figured out quite if that's like my main passion, but definitely going to continue in it.
Well, that's great. Is there anybody you would like to acknowledge or say hello to?
I would actually like to give a huge shout out to our coaches. We had two wonderful coaches, Rian Kenny and Jennifer Steele, who I would like to give a huge thank you to. They have helped us so much. Also, my parents, shout out to my dad, who should be listening.
He'd better be. He's welcome to text us to demonstrate that. Is he a texting father? Does he?
He tries.
Participate in the text world. You mentioned the symphony. Do you go to see the symphony often?
Oh, yes.
And how did you feel when they were on strike?
I was really sad since they had to cancel a lot of their big concerts that I wanted to see, but I'm happy they sorted that all out.
Yeah, I think sometimes folks think about the musicians aren't playing and adults who go to see them can't hear them. But, you know, there's some kids that have role models and ball players, and to not be able to see your symphony is got to be really heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. To miss all that time. So I'm glad they're back, and I'm glad you get to work with them. Anything else you'd like to say?
I'm just really happy that I get to play with these two.
Great. Well, I'm happy you're here. Let's meet the other flute player who's here. What's your name?
I'm Kelsey Bears.
And tell me about yourself, please.
Well, I'm a senior at Hampton High School, and I'm involved in the band program there. And I'm also in the Pittsburgh Youth Symphony Orchestra, and we're playing some really great music. We're playing Don Juan and Brahms' Second Symphony. So I just wanted to mention that.
When did you begin playing flute?
I started playing flute, I think, when I was in the third or fourth grade.
I guess that's when they try, they being the public education system, to sort of fit you to instruments.
Yeah.
Did they try different?
They did. And I had started playing piano a couple years earlier. And then one day in band class, they brought in all the different instruments and we tried them out. And I remember flute was my favorite by far.
Yeah, that was the same for me. I can remember I ended up with drums. I kind of wanted to do trumpet, but I don't think I had the right lips, I guess, for it. But I can remember kind of meeting all the instruments.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
Well, I remember my first flute, I was so tiny at the time that the head joint was actually curved because my arms weren't long enough to hold it. So it was really cute.
Now, are you both playing similar flutes?
We actually have the exact same flute, coincidentally, which is odd. I just got a new flute over the summer, and she's had it for a while. But it's a Muramatsu, which is a Japanese brand.
Well, you sound terrific. And I also wanted to ask if you'd like to say hello to anyone or acknowledge anyone.
I would like to say hello to my parents, who should be listening from New York, and my friend Rebecca, who is listening from her rehearsal today.
Well, that's wonderful. Are your parents out of town this weekend?
Yeah, they're visiting my grandparents.
Well, I hope they're tuned in, and I hope your grandparents are listening too. And now we'll get to meet the one who's different than the others, at least instrument-wise, today. I'll let you introduce yourself.
My name is Lexi Kroll. I am a senior at Lincoln Park Performing Arts Charter School, and I've been playing the oboe since about the end of sixth grade.
And some people don't know where Lincoln Park Performing Arts Charter School is. It's in Baden, right?
Yeah, it's in Midland. Yeah. So very close to the Ambridge and Beaver area.
Okay, in Midland.
I travel about an hour to get to school every day. I live in Gibsonia.
Oh, wow. And you travel an hour to go to the school. Why?
This school has opened so many doors and exposed opportunities for me that I didn't ever think were possible. I am now in the Pittsburgh Youth Symphony Orchestra. I study with a teacher who plays in the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. I have all these great college audition experiences. I went to the Brevard Music Center Summer Intensive, and that just wouldn't have been possible had I not transferred.
You should be a spokesperson for the school. Youth Chamber Connection sounds like it's been good to you, too.
Oh, absolutely. Chamber music is one of the most important things that you can be a part of as a musician. It really defines your playing and helps you out so much. And you get to meet great people.
Anybody else you'd like to acknowledge or say hello to?
Yeah, I would like to acknowledge Lori Cunningham, who is the woman who made all of Youth Chamber Connection possible. She's wonderful, and we wouldn't be doing any of the things we would without her. And I'd like to say hello to my parents and hello to my teacher, Scott Bell.
Terrific. And you kind of think, Youth Chamber Connection, well, of course. This has been going on for 50 or 60 years, bringing students together from different schools to play in small ensembles. Nope. Lori brought it to life just a few years ago, and it's really been terrific. One more question for you. And can you tell us, you're about to play the third movement of a work, but tell us about what you are playing.
Sure. So this is the first trio of six trios by a man named James Hook, and he lived from 1746 to 1827. This was written in 1795, and he was from Norwich, England. He was an organist and a composer.
And we also promised that we'd learn about the background of the name of the trio.
Sure. So our name is Incalzando, and that name came when we, at our first rehearsal, our coach, Rhianne Kenny, was helping us through our first read of a piece, and we came across the word Incalzando and didn't know what it meant. She scolded us a little bit. She said, well, girls, you really should have looked this up. And we looked at her and said, well, Rhianne, do you know what it means? Well, no, but you should look it up. So we ended up naming our trio after it. And yes, we did look it up. And the word incalzando is Italian for pressing on and moving forward.
I like that.
We did too.
I like it a lot. There's a lot of Saturday Light Brigade kind of in that, moving forward and pressing on. Well, you're going to play the last movement now. Oh, thank you for doing that. You can just put that mic back in the stand. You'll be able to hear this performance archived at neighborhoodvoices.org and youthexpress.org. We are going to press on once again with the Incalzando Trio. Thank you. You sound wonderful. And a text message just came in that says the oboe player's dad is listening. And I'm sure that's not the only relative that's tuned in this morning. Thank you so much to the Incalzando Trio and to Youth Chamber Connection. You can learn more about Youth Chamber Connection online and the great work they do. And we hope you'll look for them at youthchamberconnection.org. Well, coming up, live music in our studios. It's going to be a pleasure to open up our studios for a live performance. That'll be coming up right after the top of the hour. Kim Maverick will be joining us. A quick thank you to you if you are one of the 361 people, including 73 first-time donors, contributing a record-setting $46,701 during our year-end campaign. If you missed the opportunity to do so, you can always make a secure donation at slbradio.org/donate. Or by phoning us at 412-200-5975 or 1-888-752-7234. Thanks. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger, this is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings at WRCT Pittsburgh, WIUPFM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, WNJR Washington, WCUC Clarion, WMCK.FM McKeesport, PCTV Comcast 21, Verizon 47 Pittsburgh, RadioPhoenix.org, Loudspeaker.FM Fort Collins, Colorado, Audio Now, where you can listen by phone at area code 515-605-9542, and online at slbradio.org/radio.
It's the end of the line, and I know it's been rough. Oh, but time after time, it was always enough. You were there when I laughed. You were there when I cried. You were there as I tell you goodbye. It's the end of the line, and whatever they say, I was yours, you were mine, just a heartbeat away. Close enough to be kissed, far enough to be missed, from the cradle to silver. In due time there will be someone else who will see all the good in your heart, even though we're apart. Oh, how I've loved your heart. In the blink of all that's left is the past, and the memories fade till there's silence at last. But the song will remember, the spark will still shine. It's the light at the end of the line. There's a light at the end of the line.
That's the title song to Janice Ian's latest, The Light at the End of the Line. And she really sounds good, doesn't she? You know, I didn't think to check her age. We've been featuring her all morning. Do you want to know? It's not that important, but I'm kind of curious. Only 70. And I say that I might have thought she was older, but we forget that she's been around for so long, and she started so young, society's child. Her top 10 single, or I'm sorry, that was a hit. Way back when she was only 14 years old, and then the song at 17, she was 15, Taking the World by Storm. And this album of hers is really nice. The lyrics are all included. She includes the stories behind the songs, and it's beautifully done. I know she's touring in support of it. We might try to get her here for an interview if we can, although last I checked, I don't think Pittsburgh is on her itinerary.
The Saturday Light Brigade is made possible in part with support from the Allegheny Regional Asset District, putting Allegheny County sales tax dollars to work in regional libraries, parks, sports facilities, and arts and culture programs. Learn more at radworkshere.org.